Hello, and welcome to The Raw Bar. I'm Goddess Cecilia, pleasure educator and consultant, and I will be your host. I've invited my friends and colleagues to sit, snack, get real, and probably a little salty about sexuality and pleasure. We've also saved a seat for you. And because of the nature of this podcast, we want to make sure that you're aware that there will be conversations about sexuality, sexual acts, probably some spicy language, and a bunch of other things that are definitely not appropriate for younger ears. So give yourself some solo time if you can. Grab a drink like tea, wine, water, or boba. Don't forget your snackies. Ease in and get comfy. Here's to a pleasurable time together. This season of Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia is brought to you by MysteryPleasureBox.com. Surprise yourself with a subscription to MysteryPleasureBox.com, a fun and affordable way to discover new sex toys and novelty products every month, billed and delivered discreetly. You get an arsenal of potions, lotions, sex toys, and bedroom accessories picked by industry experts. Every box you receive is packed with high-quality, full-size, brand-name products from brands you know and love. So sign up at MysteryPleasureBox.com and use code GODDESS for 10% off your first box. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia. Today is going to be my last episode for the season, as it were. For those of you who are not in the know, I also have the first season in audio format, so definitely check that out as well on all the major areas where podcasts happen, where you usually get your audio podcast. Today, I am interviewing two folks who are part of the Boston Area Rape Crisis Center's Survivor Speakers Bureau, of which I am also a very proud member of. And so there will be potentially content warning, right? Content warning slash trigger warning. Potentially there may be conversations about being a survivor of sexual assault. And we won't really talk about our specific stories. We're not going to get into our specific stories, which is part of what we do. But we're mainly going to be talking about the experience of being survivor speakers, because I think a lot of the time we talk about our stories, but a lot of people then don't hear about the like before and after, right? Like most people will see us talking, doing our thing, and then we like get to go off into the world being our fantastic selves. And there's a lot that we do aside from just talking about our stories. If it's okay, I'm going to read your bio, Corey.
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. So the person who is on screen with me right now, who is online with me right now, is Corey. Pronouns are he, him, his, and they, them, theirs. Corey is 41 and is originally from the Midwest, but has been living in Boston for 15 years. Activism has been a passion of his for the last 20 plus. And he's using his powers for good is important to him. He enjoys a bunch of artistic and nerdy things, including musicals, modern art, queer science fiction, mysteries, and singing in the car. One of my personal favorite things as well. Find him on Instagram at Phoenix No Hate. And I will put all of that in the description as well. But yeah, so first, let's just check in. Right. How are you doing? It's been Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month was last month. Yep. May then came in and was just like, bam, awful thing, awful thing, awful thing, awful thing, like back to back. How have you been?
Pretty good, I'd say. So right now I'm transitioning careers to do peer support. And so what's nice about peer support is we talk a lot about the awful things, but we also just laugh and joke. And as someone who gives support, you also receive support. So it's unlike other clinical roles where one person is the giver of support and the other person receives the support. and peer support everyone, no matter what their position. That's why we're called peers, so that the people, we're all peers. It's new. It's a little more radical. And I totally dig it. Talk to me about your intense stuff all day long. I'm here for it. Let's go.
That's awesome. Yeah, because we could talk about that too while we're waiting for Eve. But I feel like so much of what people think of, especially in the like mental health realm, that there's a lot of this like top down, like a person, you talk to a person and they like, a lot of people sometimes assume that there's always some sort of like diagnosis, which isn't always the case. But I do think that there's still a lot of misconceptions about what support can look like.
Yeah, it's real exciting. I'm very into it, because what I've been learning, and we only use the eye. So what I've been learning, because we can't, like, is that so many people are carrying around all these hurts and things that they don't feel like they can talk about in their families or with their friends, because they've learned that if they talk about it, the reaction is often not good, or maybe they're pushed to get help that they don't want, or the help they get is not a good fit. So we've got people that want help, but they're not getting help that helps them, or they're being forced into systems that aren't, like, some of the mental health systems can cause more harm than good, depending on the treatment. If you're treating someone like a person, that's one thing, but if you're treating someone like a problem to be fixed and not treating someone like a human being with dignity, that can cause harm.
Oh, that's such a good point, Corey. I see that our other guest is here. Jocelyn, let me read your bio. Okay. Oh, did you have something to say? Sorry.
Oh, I just wanted to say it's humorous, because in the spirit of self-care, I actually have Instagram and social media blocked on my phone during like precious hours, which I basically make it so I can hardly access social media for most of my day. So otherwise, I'd spend most of my day on it. But that actually bit me in the butt, because then I can't get onto this. Embarrassing, but I thought it was worth sharing, since we're going to definitely talk about some self-care.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You know what? I need to figure out how to do that. I have only recently started using the do not disturb thing, because I was just like, just turn everything off, because like emails too will get me, like, gotta swipe and delete shit. Like, it's awful. But let me read your bio. Thank you that you're here, and then we can get started. Okay. All right. Eve is driven by a passion to help empower others to advance their vision for creating a better world. By applying her zest and tenacity to every project or goal, she delivers beyond what's expected. Eve is an advocate for survivors of trauma, restorative justice, leadership development, and sex education. She's committed to ending violence through education, prevention, and raising awareness by empowering youth and survivors to know their bodies and their rights. After graduating with a BA in Human Rights from Trinity College, she earned her MSW from Smith College's School of Social Work in August 2018. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Fellow social worker. Very nice. So I did a brief little intro a little bit beforehand, that we are all part of the Survivor Speakers Bureau, the Boston Area Rape Crisis's Survivor Speakers Bureau. All the acronyms, all the letters. It's a lot. And part of why I wanted to interview other survivor speakers was because I feel like we don't get to talk a lot unless they ask, but we don't really get to talk about the process of speaking, like what that is like for speakers, for the survivors who do it, and just talk about all the things around that mainly. Corey, if you don't mind, we can start with you. How did you learn about the Survivor Speakers Bureau? And what made you decide to join it?
So for me, I moved back to Boston in my middle 20s. And like most people in their middle 20s, went to a lot of protests and rallies and things. And I don't even remember what it was, because it's now been over 10 years. But there was a survivor speaker that did a speech. And I was like transfixed, because I had been to Take Back the Nights and other events, but just the bravery of it, like I was taken aback, and the energy and just how the crowd was reacting. And I was like, that is so cool. And I think at the end there was something said, if you want to like connect, here's the name of Bark, reach out. And so I did, and then like connected to do the training, because I was like, there's other survivors that want to share their... I had already shared my story a little bit because, in not getting into much details, but when I was... The second time I was sexually assaulted, I was doing a sexual assault internship. So I was already, like, doing that kind of activism already before I even knew BARC existed.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah, I'm not going to name the person just out of respect, but their speech was just... It really hit something in me. Like, I want to do that. How do I do that? And basically, we went to a training and applied. And then they said yes, and I said yes. And 10 plus years later, here we are.
Yeah, and you and I were in the same cohort.
I didn't want to ruin that, and I wanted to let you share that. But yes, you and I were OGs in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I know. I think about it. I'm like, oh, my God, it's been over 10 years at this point. I feel like I have to do math every time I think about it. It's a little wild.
I think it was June of 2011.
That sounds right. That sounds right.
It could be wrong, but I don't think it is.
That sounds right to me. Jocelyn, how about you?
It's such a great question. It feels like one of those, almost like a friend who you're like, how did we even meet? Wasn't I born knowing BARC? Like, I know it's not the case. As someone who now leads like therapy groups for trauma survivors, like I love group work and I have this new slogan that I've heard from someone else and I've fully adopted it as my own. I wish I could know, maybe other people can tell me who first said it, but just that being a survivor is like the worst club, but the best people. And so I believe that I found my people through like survivor activism work. And that's really what led me to discovering BARC. I believe it was pulling up because I could never figure out what the acronym is. I was at a MASSOC conference. And finally, after Google imaging it, it's the Massachusetts Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers. So, man, mind you, I found myself at one of these conferences trying to learn, trying to figure out what the hell had happened to me. And meanwhile, like doing that through exploring my professional identity. And I saw there was an incredible BARC workshop. And I believe that was my first exposure to the work that they do, which, as you both know, is even more than just the Survivors Bureau, which is just one piece. Shout out to BARC. And I also did a lot of activism in college, public speaking and running Take Back the Nights and finding my tribe, so to speak, at the Women Gender Resource Action Center. I used to call it WAGRAC. I don't know what they call it now at Trinity College, but that was where I found community. And when I learned about sort of a speaker's bureau where I could have support from like an organization rather than feeling like I needed to be the person rallying people to come help. Can you move the speaker? Can you get a mic? Can we figure out the order? Like that I could just show up and speak and get support and public speaking and writing my story. That was like very exciting to me. But I will say, I think looking back, it's been a lot different than I would have anticipated. I think I still have a lot of desire to improve my public speaking abilities and just have like speaking to large audiences be like a part of my life's work. And so I feel like there's more I want to learn in that realm. And in other unexpected ways, I found, I don't think I knew that I was also still looking for more community, more connection to like work that BARC does. So I feel like it's brought me a lot of gifts that I didn't even know upon like first discovering. But when I read the mission of the Survivor Speakers Bureau, like I feel so proud to be part of the work, the organization, but really just like the mission to speak to so many different audiences and be the change through how we show up, telling our stories, but most of all, like helping create a safe enough space for dialogue to happen when we all know this topic is not easy, light combos most of the time.
Definitely. When did you join?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
The pandemic
is like 10 years, right? So
seriously,
not more than 3 years. I think it's been 3 years. Corey, do you know?
Yeah, that sounds about right to me.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, I'm bummed because I just don't get to come to the meetings ever. It's usually like I'm in a car on my way to dance class. So it's just, I can't be on Zoom and also driving. Mm-hmm. Not safe.
Oops.
Yeah. But so I do miss that part of the community aspect of it all. But I do love that every time we have every time I've done a speaking engagement, at least connecting with the other survivor is like one of my favorite things. And it's always feels like, oh, it's like a long lost cousin that I haven't seen in a long time. And we get to, you know, get to know each other a little bit. And yeah. And so I learned about the Survivor Speakers Bureau because I think I was honestly like on their mailing list. I had a friend who, or a friend and a coworker who participated in the Bark Walk. And I was like, wow, like this organization exists out here. I had no idea. And I think I was just like, yeah, put me on the mailing list. Like, I want to know about everything that they're doing. And then I think they advertised another round of training for the Survivor Speakers Bureau. And I was like, yes, let's do it. At that time, it was like, there was a huge transition in my life happening. And it just felt like the timing was right. And this is something that I need to have in my life. Yeah. And I feel like it's hard some days. And then also it's still like one of the things I'm really proud of being a part of. And so speaking about specific engagements, right? That's what we call them when we go and talk to people. What usually happens is that it's not just us showing up and we're like, hi, hello, we're here to tell you our stories, right? It's like someone usually requests, an organization usually requests through BARC to have a survivor speaker come and talk at their event. And like events vary, right? They are sometimes Take Back the Night events. They are like workshops for specific groups of people, right? Folks in the medical field, law enforcement, and a bunch of different things. Do you have an example of which speaking engagements were ones that have left you feeling more like energized versus the ones that leave you feeling a little more drained? Either of you can go ahead.
A couple come to mind. Corey, can I jump in? Yeah. So basically one of my first in-person events was at a high school, and I don't know if this is specifically like I would categorize as drained, but I'm reflecting right now that it was such a large audience, and there were good questions asked at the end, but I feel like something about the emotional impact of being amongst a big sea of high schoolers, like that took me by surprise. There was someone much, much older, maybe in their senior years, who came up to me afterwards. And I feel like there was just like a little bit of a heaviness that I felt in the disclosure that kind of was taking place between the audience and I and me. And also that was an unfortunate event where like it ended up in the news, which like isn't supposed to happen. So that created a little bit of stress that I could categorize as draining in a sense, just I think sometimes the lack of control we have, even as we take these calculated risks of, do we use our names? Do we have our pictures taken? Like I feel like BARC does such a good job of really being like super on it. So that was an experience that I'd say was like a tiny bit mixed, but really it's hard to think of like negative experiences. What came to mind first when you said that was a virtual event I did this past year with the BARC group of kind of friends and partners, loved ones of survivors. And it feels a little vulnerable to say like part of what was energizing about it, but it's true. They sent me a card afterwards, and the facilitator sent like some of the takeaways from the engagement. And I'm such a like words of affirmation person that like 100% like knowing that I had an impact, that like my story, my words, my presence like really mattered, might have had a lasting kind of life, like who knows, like the ripple effect. So I felt very moved just to really know. A lot of times I think we don't know, like we don't have like a thankless job, like sometimes silence means that it was a very impactful event, but we don't always get even in the question and answer part the full impact. So that was very energizing for me. It felt very meaningful to the questions, just the fact that that audience was like a kind of audience that at that moment in my recovery felt like particularly salient or meaningful to speak to. So I'd say that it feels like as I evolve and continue my own recovery journey, I imagine like I was a parent, but I'd feel like different about this question. I think I'd probably be drained at any event, but that's a different story. Yeah. How about you? Yeah. How about you, Corey? I don't know, Cecilia, if you wanted to ask anything else, but what's coming up.
For me, like, I tend to drive with most of the speed engagements I do. The only couple ones where I felt upset is when people ask, like, victim blamey questions. Mm-hmm. What did you do to experience sexual assault? Mm-hmm. I can avoid it. And, like, it's not a pothole. It's like, I just think, like, we frame things that we find dangerous that we maybe haven't experienced. So people would, like, basically ask me, so if my friend was doing something similar to you, like drinking at a bar, like, what would you do so that didn't happen? That's not how sexual assault functions. Mm-hmm. I can understand the thinking behind the questions, but sometimes the questions are like blaming you for experiencing sexual violence or the after school special, like the avoidance issue. And I'm like, okay, nope. But I want those questions also, even though it can energetically be frustrating. Because if people are walking around in the world with those types of bias about how sexual assault happens and why it happens, I want those questions. But also, sometimes I'm just like, wow, we really need to have these conversations more often. Some of the questions are basically like insinuating that it was my fault, or all these different stereotypical notions we have about what sexual violence looks like, where it often doesn't look like that. But in terms of events, I really take back the nights and other like survivor-led, survivor-centric events where you can really see people using their voice, and maybe they haven't even ever shared before, but it's like such a beautiful thing. Not that they have had that experience, but stepping into a brave space where they're sharing it makes me want to cry in a good way, because this is not a club that anyone would be like, I want to have had this experience or these experiences in my case. But hers really do inspire me. Listening to them, watching them take space and share their truths in a public way really makes it a space that I want to be part of, because I figure it's not a space like that we would choose to be part of, but I love being around other survivors and hearing them really speak against that silence that can be really isolating and hard for people. It's like, yeah, you go. I'm here for it. I will always be here for hearing people speak their truth.
Yes. Absolutely. I think that, for me also, sometimes the ones that end up really draining are when the questions are a little like, I understand what you're saying. And also, here's another perspective. And one of the things that I feel like I've really thought about lately is, right, I feel like there are so many instances where victim blaming language is so ingrained in just like everyday speech. Once I can't even think of an actual specific example.
Like we often say, if that happens, and it's, if I was talking about whether it rained, that would be one thing. But if you say, if that happens to someone sharing an experience of sexual violence or other kinds of violence, that's that common turn of phrase that we often use could be really incredibly invalidating. Because it's like, I believe you, I hear you, it happened, not like, that's a big if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. You mean like when like someone is sharing their story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another misconception that comes to mind, I don't think this has come up in an engagement, but I think something that still exists really pervasively out there is around false reporting, and just even about like how few survivors get justice who do make allegations. I don't know if I'm using all the right court terminology, but if you read Chanel Miller's book, I feel like it does such an incredible job of kind of illuminating like what that experience is. And just, I don't know, so few people report falsely, and especially working with a lot of survivors now as a therapist who have like sexual abuse history, childhood trauma, just that feeling that some people have in their own truth and their experience. So I feel like it goes so deep that it's like internal, I don't even know what you would call it, like internalized, I don't know if it's sexism, misogyny, like it's so rape culture. It's such a hard part about trauma recovery is how our brains are affected and our memories are affected. And yeah, I think that we could go on about this forever. There's some really great articles about dispelling the like false memory movement and just analyzing it that I'd love to share with you and maybe continue this conversation, but it's something I'm really passionate about and also like really challenges me in terms of this work, like how to support survivors and be a survivor and hold that reality of like how much there is against us. I don't know. I'm obviously like, I have the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp trial like on my mind, and I've been really like monitoring how much news consumption these days when it just doesn't stop, like all the very traumatic, feels like it's just ongoing. So I'm probably not most informed on it on this call, but did want to just bring up the myth that like survivors are lying or making it up, especially if they don't have all the details. It just makes me crazy.
Right.
I feel my muscles starting to clench right now. And I don't want to rant because I want to listen to the other great questions you have prepared.
No, that's super valid. And yeah, I was saying right before you came on that it has been a hard month. And like with first, there was obviously like April was Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month. And then May just kept clobbering us with like event after event of things within the US and elsewhere that were just so difficult. And then add on to that, so much of the noise about the things that are happening with very public celebrity relationships is there's a lot happening. So it's easy. And I feel like so many people have missed the mark on paying attention to what they're saying and what they're typing, especially in regards to that very public situation that's happening with two celebrities. Like it's, and the worst thing is that if you accidentally click on something when you're trying to swipe it away, then your phone is, oh, but you want to see more of these things. And I'm like, no, I do not. In fact, want any YouTube announcements about anything. Please stop. So if anyone can tell me how to get rid of that situation, I just swipe it away because I'm just like, no. But I think that this is a great segue to talk a little bit about self-care, right? And something that you had mentioned too, Jocelyn. I talk a lot about self-care in my work, and a lot of it is very like pleasure-centered. And I think that there's been a huge move ties it and turn it into this very like, basically turn it into a commodity, right? When it's like literally a way that people just move about their day. And we do, and it is something that I feel like is talked about during our training as well, that the concept of self-care, like before, during, after a speaking engagement is like really important, even though it has been extremely diluted in the past several years. So what is your relationship to self-care as a survivor, and has it changed since doing the speaking engagements?
Yeah, I can start us off. I think like at first I didn't do a lot of self-care because I'd already been doing stuff similar and I was like, you got this, it's fine. And then like sometimes they would be like trainings for the center, which like were pretty easy, but I found the ones I had a hardest time with were ones where I would, people that I knew in my not be survivor speaker life would share or something, and that would throw me off a little bit, because instead of focusing on like sharing my speech and being present, I was just like, oh man, these people that I care about are sharing their experiences, and I have a lot of empathy. And so that empathy bubble would just, if you put too many suds in a bath, it would just be, bathing is one of my favorite also forms of self-care, by the way, like a hot bubble bath with some scented soap, just to put it out there, like my bath tub is like my favorite spot in the house. If I'm stressed, just soak a nice hot bath and all the stress goes right down the drain.
Oh,
but
I love that.
Just, yeah, I think that was the only thing, because the community of survivors, we often know other survivors, right? Like you can't know who identifies as a survivor if that's not communicated, but it's a small world. And so I find the only ones where I ever really had to do self-care after would be people who had similar experiences to me, who would share in that space with me. And then it would be really hard for me. I would just really feel Because sometimes I would know, but I didn't know details. And other times I didn't know that they had that experience at all. And it really threw me off because it's like, when you use your story as a tool, there's some sort of emotional distance for me where I'm using it to educate people. I'm using it to dispel a lot of these myths and awful stereotypes we have about the realities of sexual violence. But then you have another human being who you know and care about, and they're sharing their experiences. And it would hurt my heart sometimes because, you know, I have a heart. And so I would have to go eat something, or maybe their experience was similar to mine. And so it would, even listening to other survivor speaker stories would sometimes cause a little ripple in my experience. And then the only other time I really had to do self-care was when people asked questions about my family. Mm. So my family, I love them, but they were not super great after I was sexually assaulted. Like they're... It was like a we don't talk about Bruno situation, but the Bruno was that I had been sexually assaulted. So, and when I would try to talk about it, they're like, that was a hard time for everyone. We don't talk about it. So one time someone asked a question about my family and I had to actually, I started to answer it. I got super emotional and slightly triggered. I had to be like, okay, so I'm getting too emotional. Let's just take a step back and move on to a different question.
Yeah, I'm glad that you were able to put up, recognize what was happening and then put up the like boundary right away. Yeah, especially because, yeah, I especially in the middle of a speaking engagement, that can be hard for sure.
Let's take a quick break. Check in with your body. What do you need? Do you need to stretch? Do you need to use the restroom? Do you need some extra water? Do whatever you need to take care of you, and we'll be right back.
Kumusta? My name is Antoinette, and I am honored to be working with Goddess Cecilia in producing the Raw Bar Season 1 and 2. I hope that you are enjoying it so far. If you're looking for a podcast support so you can focus on your liberation work, and if you are a Black, Indigenous, and a person of color, then I will be more than happy to be a part of your podcasting journey. I am a proud Filipina immigrant based in France, producing exclusively for BIPOC podcasters to amplify melanated voices, because you all know we all need to be heard. And I am here to ensure that the production and listening experience will be easeful and joyful for you and your listeners. Head on to unapologeticamplified.com for more details. See you soon.
I'm generally like such a crier. Oh my gosh. I'll like the commercials that are like adorable. I'm like, but the kitties are so cute. I'm such a crier. But usually I'm able to like get it together for the speaking engagement. And there was definitely one in which I did not, because I don't remember who I was with, but I was with another speaker and they got emotional. And so then I started talking and I was like, I got this. And another part of it was that actually one of my like dear friends happened to be in the audience and I knew they were going to be there, but just looking at their face suddenly was just like, I felt so, I think it was that I had been in such a like comfortable space that I just like, and I'm just like, I'm sorry. And of course it's fine. But yeah, there was a lot of, okay, we need to do a whole woosah situation after this and take a nap. Yeah, all of that stuff. I definitely try to build in, okay, what can I get myself Starbucks afterwards? Can I find a place that has like bubble tea afterwards? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that will make, that usually helps me feel a little more like grounded.
I will bring snacks for the other speakers too. Like, I'll do self-care for me, but I also bring the little emergency, like the Babysitter's Club.
Good to know.
Like little kids like that, basically. One time, like someone was running late. I was like, here's a candy bar. Do you want like a drink? Do you like, I have a whole bag of things, because the thing about self-care is you can be like, oh, I've done this a million times and I'll be fine. And then, yeah, I've never cried, but I definitely have gotten angry a couple times at some of the questions, like, or yeah, really sad or slightly triggered. So whether it's for me or other people, I think if we're in survivor spaces, it's always good to have the basics of self-care. So maybe a drink, hot or cold, something mm-hmm. that's naturally comforting, candy, tissues, because nobody needs to be crying without tissue. I'm like often, there was one speaking engagement where there was a lot of crying and I literally went to the dean of some whatever college we were in, and because they didn't have any tissues, and asked for a box of tissues and got it and brought it back. It was like, we cannot have of this event without tissues, guys. Like it's just, crying was gonna happen.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, Corey. I was getting excited and realized that you and I don't think have done like in-person speaking engagements because of how much of my time serving has been online. So I'm secretly like hoping I can pick my engagements based on when you'll be there, because I love receiving. I guess that's one way in which I practice self-care, by like really trying to make it a practice of receiving gifts and like taking pleasure in that, because that can be really hard for many of us who have maybe learned to be oriented towards other people's wants and needs, and especially how many of us go into helping professions who have our own histories. Like that's where we derive sometimes sense of ourselves, and that it doesn't really work so long in the long run if that's what you depend on. So I had a couple like somewhat contradictory things come up when I hear this question. So one part of me has totally tried to bypass like learning how to really hone self-care practices. Like 10 years ago, for instance, I did a leadership mm-hmm. program where they invited us to work toward a year-long plan. What are your personal goals, relational, global? And I was like, I wrote down the things that I like personally wanted to work on, but I like hit the ground running when I left that program. It was very impactful, but I just started to focus on larger kind of external facing work. I wouldn't say I like achieved my like global goals by any stretch, but like I realized this past month, I got to participate in, this is the Omega Women's Leadership Program. They have they just piloted their online program. Like 10 years later, it was like online for the first time. And so revisiting the material, obviously it's evolved in the past 10 years. I was like, shoot, I've like totally neglected to really invest in these practices that I like talk about mostly all day long. And I'm very much like committed mentally or like intellectually to them. And yet I don't want to say it. I do feel like it has to do with ongoing trauma recovery work, but I don't know. It's a little hard for me to completely parse out, except that it's hard. It's really hard for many of us to meditate, or money is like a whole other thing, whether you have it or not, like our relationship thing, like receiving, spending time or money on ourselves. But on the other hand, in a positive light, I feel like I really take seriously like the idea that the Survivor Speakers Bureau is not therapy. So like it has a therapeutic effect, and it's super meaningful for all of us, I'm sure. So I like no judgment at all for anyone who's ever cried during an engagement. I'm sure I have teared up and whatnot, but I guess it's on my mind right now because of everything happening in the world. But as a therapist or as like a speaker, even, yes, we're human, and like showing that we care and we feel is like always key. I think I definitely value not being like a blank slate. And like, I really value the opportunity it gives other people to like feel their feelings without needing to take care of me or worry about, am I going to be okay? So I feel like I do want to give myself some kudos. I don't think I've completely bypassed all of the things. I do take care to make sure I'm well fed before, make sure I treat myself afterwards kindly and gently, and celebrate the event with the strength and courage that it takes each time. It can be exhausting for sure. Like you were saying, I think I was even like denying like that they can feel really draining. Yeah, I guess I just wanted to say, it feels like sometimes I'll go through depressing like weeks or months or seasons. And I find that being part of BARC's Speakers Bureau is a part of my self-care. I leave I feel like I'm contradicting myself a bunch, but I leave feeling I'm better able to take care of myself because I'm reconnected to my why, like my purpose. It's not like who I wish, I think Corey was saying, I don't wish that this had happened. Who would I be without this? But these experiences I've had of trauma have totally informed and been like formative for like how I show up in my life, not just in work, but elsewhere. And then the pleasure piece, like joy and pleasure and laughter, like that has not come supernaturally to me. I recently discovered something called Interplay, and I really want to explore it more. It was really fun and scary, and I don't know, felt a little bit like improv. I definitely recommend it to anyone who listens to this to check it out. I think that it's all over the country. It started in the 70s and in Oakland, and there are a lot of like local teachers. Pretty sure a lot of it's free or donation based. But for me, it seems like a safe container where like I and others who have difficulty accessing that type of play and like spontaneity that sometimes gets us stuck when we are healing from trauma. So I just thought I would share that as something new that's giving me pleasure. And I couldn't not mention my puppy. I totally have a puppy that is teaching me all sorts of lessons around pleasure, slowing down. I just found myself hugging her a lot today. Follow her on Instagram, Marvelous Miss Maisie. And, yeah, just do nothing. Like that I'm getting something just from doing nothing and savoring her cuteness and the feelings. Like it's a full sensory experience. I had a psychiatrist tell me during the pandemic at one point, get a puppy. I was like, I freaking love this person. Can that be like a slogan for someone? Like, medications can be life-saving for many people, and 100% recommend for anyone who can access even like a neighbor's puppy, anyone. Like, the way it can get you out of bed or help you move when life's hard to move through is really full of opportunities for self-care.
I love that. Could you tell us exactly what was it? Impact play?
Interplay?
Like what that Interplay?
Interplay.
Thank you. Not impact play. Sorry. Yeah. That's the sex ed part.
That's another kind of play.
I don't know if that's gonna play, but Impact Boston is also a cool survivor resource where I did some self-defense training and some boundary training that was interesting. But interplay.org, I think, is what it's called. Gosh, I wish I could articulate something profound about what it is. There's lots of different exercises, and it feels, if you've ever done any like theater classes, like you're not forced to do anything. It's like very much, there was a little someone's child in my class, and there were people in their probably like 70s or 80s, all sorts of body types and abilities. So really like a unique space that I think draws people for lots of different reasons and from different places. I think this was at a church in Cambridge, Mass. So doing stuff with your body, making sounds, like we did a fun game with our names that like was just like an icebreaker. But I think for most of us, like I'm not used to making funny noises or making up a language and talking in it. Like that actually was really challenging for me.
Oh my gosh.
So just like pushing yourself in ways that it's like just being silly. Like I think that we all need more of that right now. I don't know if that answered your question, but that was
I love that. And I also love that you said the piece about doing nothing. I don't know if either of you follow the NAP ministry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so good. They're on Instagram. They're on Twitter. And it has changed the way that I look at literally everything. And I think that part of it, too, is that I'm really trying harder to be more compassionate to myself. I feel like I'm a really good cheerleader of myself, but the compassion piece was a lot harder for some reason. I'd be like, yeah, go you did the thing. If I didn't do the thing, I would be like, that was not cool, Cecilia. And now I'm trying to be like, you know what? It's okay. There's all these things. And like being more aware of not just my limitations, but what has led me to not feel confident in doing something and being just like more compassionate with myself. That's been hard, but I feel like that's been a big piece of my like self-care process.
Can I share something?
Yeah.
So I have a sort of no negative voice that like will be like, remember that thing we did 20 years ago? Like, it's 3 a.m. Let's just obsessively think about that.
Oh my gosh.
So there's two things that I've learned that help. One is, this is really silly, but it almost baffles my negative voice. I just will sing to myself, I love myself like no one else. It's like negative voice. And then I sing and it has nothing to say. Like if I said, I love myself, it's like blah, blah, blah. But if I just do a little song, it's, what are you doing, weirdo? And then it like melts like the Wicked Witch. The other thing is, if that internal voice is being really loud and, oh, this was bad, it's like we all do good and bad things, whatever, but I will get like earworm songs stuck in my head. So that voice will just play the song. I don't know if that makes sense or helps other people, but it's so like, if it's singing along to that awful like earworm song, then it can't like talk to me about whatever. I think we all have a tendency to be too hard on ourselves. But speaking in the eye, I have a couple tricks that I do that tend to just make that voice like sort of go down so I can live in joy and happiness. And
you're basically like Rickrolling yourself, or you're Rickrolling the negative self-talk. And I think that's pretty awesome.
I've tried what feels like probably not thousands of things, but it feels like I've tried thousands of things, and that works. Or like when my negative brain is like, we should do this thing that's bad for us, I'm like, I don't want that for myself, brain. And then that also works. It really, that works. That's what works. But it really, because if you push too hard against a negative internal voice, it just gets out the megaphone and is like, blah, blah, blah. But if I just gently say in the same way, nope, we're not doing that, then it's, there's this silence in some space where, you know, because like the trauma voice can be big, loud, and just like, shh, I'm living in this body, in this headspace. I don't need that negativity.
That's right. What misconceptions do you think still exists as far as like being a survivor?
I think the main one for me is like, there's something that you did, or there's a set of behaviors that you did that caused the sexual violence to happen. And it's, I get that a lot. Or like empathy for the other person. Like if you report someone that, like someone once said to me, like, you ruined his life. And I was like, I ruined his life. Like he made his choices and I chose to report him to make it harder for him to ever do that to anyone else. And it's like this weird double standard where we're sometimes, not everybody, but can be more compassionate towards the person who committed the sexual assault than the person coming forward. There's also like a lot of narratives about, like we've talked about false reporting, where there's this idea that it happens in equal proportions or more to incidences of sexual assault, which we know isn't true. And who perpetrates, like I'm always, when I'm speaking, always reminding people, often it is people, because we have this sort of media-driven idea that it's strangers, it's someone we don't know. And it's like those narratives become really dangerous if that's all people know. So I try to sort of chip away at those ideas so that people can have a better idea that it isn't rare that it's someone that's someone who's built trust with you.
I'm sadly going to need to jump off as I hear someone come for an appointment, but I did want to respond and say that the idea that someone's letting their trauma define them is like a common one that I still hear and have experienced over the years. And yeah, that's just loaded with all sorts of assumptions that remind me too of what Corey's saying. Who gets to tell these narratives, like whose stories are centered, and like the judgment that continues to like weigh on survivors and silencing them, making them feel shame when they're actually speaking out or claiming their story. Everyone heals in their own way, but I get so fired up around that stuff, I think, because like I was saying, it can be such a formative part of someone's experience. And to be shamed into saying that you're doing something wrong by the way you're choosing to heal is just no thanks.
Yeah, definitely. Before you hop, I want to be conscious of your time. Do you want to just let us know what you're currently finding pleasure in this moment?
Definitely spending time like being present with my puppy, I'd say, and starting another support group. That might sound like a funny way to define pleasure, but I'm starting a new support group for people going through infertility and pregnancy loss. And it gives me a lot of pleasure and meaning to hold space for people. So I'm going to keep doing what, following my heart, not listening to what's going to be my compass. My birthday's this weekend, so I'm doing a lot of like reflective work. So this interview was perfect timing.
Oh, wonderful. Happy early happy birthday.
Thank you. It's good to see you, Corey, and hope to continue the conversation.
Definitely. Okay. Right. Thank you. Corey, I also want to be, I didn't realize, I just looked at my watch, I was like, holy crap, woo, time. I want to honor your time as well. And I'll ask you the final question. What are you currently finding pleasure in this moment, or at this moment in time?
Three things. I love working with my hands. So I live in an apartment that was from the 40s that hasn't really been kept. So I've been like hand polishing all the old original, most likely doorknobs, and doing like a lot of work to make it nicer. I find that satisfying because it's not just for me. I'm moving out in a couple months, but the next people that move in are going to get a much nicer apartment than the apartment that I moved into. And that idea makes me happy. I'm definitely like a forward-thinking kind of person. Like the energy that I put in, it's not my space, but someone else will be able to enjoy it. The other thing I super, super love is being around animals. So I don't actually own any pets, but I do pet care. Like currently the cats are sleeping, so we're all good, but on top of each other, which is really adorable. But just being around animals, I find like I can't stop smiling. There's something about the nature of, they can often be very empathetic, but also just like straightforward. Like I pretty much know what a cat or a dog might want or need. Whereas people can often be like a little deceptive or maybe confusing, or their needs might not be clear. But I just find that I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And I can just like snuggle. Who doesn't like a good snuggle?
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that, Corey. Thank you so much for hopping on with me. I'm glad that the timing worked. I was definitely hoping to get like several folks from the SSB on here. And I definitely think that the conversations aren't over. Like I plan on having like several of my guests return because there's always like something. And especially like timing wise, like we know that unfortunately we're not done talking about these things.
Yeah.
And I'm sure soon enough, we'll have to have another conversation, which is an awful thing to say. And also, I hope that I get to see you in another context as well in the future. But yeah, did you want to have any sort of like final words, final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I'm here for it. I know it's not like I want events in the world to happen where we need to have further conversations. We pretty much always need to, but I want to be there. I feel like my main thing about survivorship is I didn't choose to experience sexual violence. Mm. I choose to use those experiences to speak, to not be silent, to share the realities of what happened to me so other people can get an understanding for what it can look like for people. And that when something in the world, like where there's a Me Too type situation or a public case, I want to be there unless I'm triggered, which does happen sometimes, and then I can't. But I want to be there. I always tried to be the survivor I needed when I was really at a low point, because while we didn't choose this, I see other survivors as being the same part of the community that I am as a survivor, and I care. And I want to safely and not overdo it, but I want to be there as much as I can, because I can relate from my own experiences, and I do care a lot.
I can say personally, as someone who has known you for as long as I have now, you're definitely like one of the most caring people that I know. And it's just like, it's always such like an honor to share spaces with you.
Oh, you too. See, we're OGs. I get this excitement.
That's right.
We're together because it's when I don't have a connection with someone, but when we do a speaking engagement, I feel like because we've done some before, like I get this electric sort of like excitement because I know it's going to be good. And that I think we really do, this is going to be super cheesy, but I think we do impact people's lives in a good way when we are talking about these things, because isolation is real. Feeling like maybe you're the only one that this happened to is a real feeling. And I'm not a superhero, but if I can just show up and say I've had similar experiences to maybe, we don't know who has experienced sexual violence and we can't, but just sharing those words can make someone feel less alone. And I will do that every single time. I'm here for that. I'm out of words basically, but it means a lot to me.
Yes, totally 100% agree. Corey, thank you again so much for joining me. Thank you to Jocelyn for joining us as well. Yeah, I'll see you soon, Corey.
Looking forward to it. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Well, friends, it's time to go our separate ways. I hope you're feeling as satiated and stimulated from today's podcast as I am. make sure you rate and review today's episode on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Lastly, head over to rawbarpod.com. That's rawbarpod.com to find out how you can connect with my guests and me and how you can be a part of the Raw Bar Regulars. See you next time.